Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Steve Pavlik. Steve, it's been a long time. What do you think? Anything go on since you and I last chatted?
It's been disappointing. A range of emotions, but I think we last spoke right before the season. We were sort of talking about the expectations and challenging assumptions, and I think unfortunately that that episode probably aged pretty well. And you know, we are where we are as Penn State fans. So.
Well, I've been curious to get your perspective on things, and you're not alone in the section of the fan base who has not been one of James Franklin's biggest fans. Is that fair?
I think that's been well documented.
Okay. And I don't think you're happy about ever seeing someone get fired. Okay. So let's keep it away from that type of conversation. But I feel like this is, again, I'm trying not to say this is what you were rooting for, but I don't think you're disappointed that it came to this. I guess my question is, first of all, let's set the background, the scenario. Why is it that you had issues with James Franklin, even coming into the season before this, and I'll call it disastrous season?
Well, I mean, I think it's been honestly well documented. I mean, I don't know James Franklin personally. I don't wish any ill will on him or his family. You know, I don't know. I just know what I saw and what I didn't see. And what I didn't see were wins against teams of comparable talent. And that's sort of what we talked about. And we saw this big setup for the Oregon game. We all know how that ended. And then it sort of bled over into, it's one thing to lose against teams of comparable talent. It's another thing to lose to teams that you're three touchdown, favorites in. Just the long, I guess, record of James Franklin. This was his 12th season. I question a lot of his hires at the coordinators. I think they've sort of, panned out, and that's part of your job as a coach. I question his decisions when it came to which quarterbacks to play at times and which ones to recruit. I mean, I sort of go back to James Franklin. His first quarterback was Christian Hackenberg, and sort of spun as to, okay, well, square peg, round hole, we need to move forward with a mobile quarterback. And so that's why I was sort of perplexed when they got Drew Aller. So, you have this emphasis on the mobile quarterback. Why would you get somebody that doesn't fit your system, particularly when you wanted to make it more based on the run game? That just seemed like antithetical to me. The hire of Knowles, I'm sure we can talk about later. I think to say it's been a disappointment, that was something I did get wrong in the preview. I thought that would be an improvement. It clearly hasn't been. And look, I won't nitpick too much, but, one of the problems with Franklin is he always came across as complaining. It was always sort of, but I don't have this, I don't have that. And that's not endearing quality. And I can't help but think, the pressure got to him this year. At this point, he'd been given everything. He was given the NIL money to bring the players he needed back. He was given the money to get these coordinators. At this point, he was sort of out of excuses. I just wonder perhaps if some of that pressure got to him and he couldn't really perform there. And I guess maybe I'll just leave it there. But one thing I am, hopeful for, I think one of the things I sort of, we argue about is, are we sort of at peak Franklin? And I guess that was sort of something that Penn State's going to have to wrestle with moving forward is, you sort of had this more or less floor of a certain number of wins each season. But from my standpoint, you were never going to compete for a national championship with Franklin because he couldn't beat teams of comparable talent. And, I think now maybe there's hope with somebody else coming in that maybe they can do that, but it's not a guarantee. So I guess I'll just stop there.
Well, I've always defended, James Franklin when we've had these conversations. And I think partially, my habit is to take the other side, play devil's advocate. If you came in here telling me James Franklin was the greatest coach ever, I'd probably take the other side of it. And the thing that I find, just to address a couple of the things that you brought up, you know, James Franklin with comparable talent, when he plays against teams with similar talent. And I come back to a statistic that I'm not sure that I've shared with you, but in his record against top 10 teams, which had been so atrocious, he had been the underdog 20 consecutive times in those top 10 games. 20 consecutive times, which I think says maybe he didn't have comparable talent. And, you know, this is the extreme example is Ohio State. And the record against Ohio State, 1-10. And every one of those, or many of those, were top 10 matchups. Every one, I guess, since every time you play Ohio State, they're a top 10 team. And if you look at, if you use recruiting rankings as your baseline to measure talent, Ohio State just has had way more talent than Penn State. Now, Penn State typically ranks about 13th or 14th in recruiting classes. Ohio State is a top five class every single year, Steve.
That's true. It's also true that not many teams had double-digit leads over Ohio State, were in a position to win late in the fourth quarter and blew it the way that Franklin did multiple times. I think it's also true that in games where there was more, less disparity in terms of the talent, games with more comparable talent. I'm thinking specifically of Oregon this year. I'm thinking of Notre Dame last year. I'm thinking of some of these games against Michigan. You know, the common theme there is a loss. So I understand your point that Ohio State typically had more talent, probably stretched to say that's comparable talent. I guess I think if you look beyond Ohio State to these other games that Franklin lost, again, comparable talent is really important because there's more of an emphasis on the coaching decisions. And it's not just in-game decisions. It's decisions to hire coordinators. It's decisions about what identity your program wants to be. It's a decision about which quarterback you want to play with. In my opinion, those are the areas that he failed. And again, not everybody had double-digit leads against Ohio State that they blew in the fourth quarter.
Now, bringing up the topic of blowing 10-point leads against Ohio State, you're changing the subject. That wasn't the question. It was about comparable. Let me finish my thought. I actually agree with you, though. Okay. To me, the sin isn't losing to Ohio State. The sin is losing to Ohio State when you have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's one of these things, like, I guess it's natural. Like, when you come to the end of something, particularly a relationship, sort of think about the beginning. And you think about where Franklin started. I guess where I'm going here is, you know, that win in 16 looks more like a fluke. Let's just be honest, against Ohio State for all the reasons we've identified. But Franklin was so close in 17 and so close again in 18 to beating them. They should have beat them. They had these double-digit leads there late in the game. So what would the trajectory of that program have been under Franklin had they won, in hindsight, three times in a row against Ohio State? We talked before about, you know, the only thing more difficult than climbing up the mountain once is climbing up the mountain twice. And at the end of the day, I don't think he was able to do that. And, you know, going back to those games, the thing that was so frustrating during the season is when not only did Ohio State beat them once, they beat them twice because I think they lost subsequent games to Michigan State. My memory serves me correct.
That's an excellent point. And I do wonder with him that, you know, the losses to Ohio State, it turns into two losses, just like I think the Oregon loss this year actually turned into four losses, okay? Because I don't think if they had won that game against Oregon that they would have lost any of these three follow-up games. It was obvious that was a changed team. But the fact is the team was actually disappointing this year, even when they were 3-0 against the three cupcakes out of conference. And that's the part that really changed my feeling on James Franklin, where I was probably considered pro-James Franklin going into this season. I have no problem with the fact that he was let go, not just for the you know, losses to Oregon, UCLA, and Northwestern, but the way they played from the start of the season. So I'll ask the two-part question, Steve. What were your issues with James specifically and how he coached? And then what happened this year? It just totally went off the rails. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think talking about my issues with him as a coach, it's not just the game day decisions. It's the decision who to play at quarterback, the identity of the team, which you look back at Franklin era, like, what would you say was the identity of Penn State football under James Franklin? I don't really have a concrete answer to that. Now, we talked before about what the identity was under Joe Paterno, and that was a group overachieving, tough guys that were going to play hard for four quarters. And for some reason, we've lost that identity. And you don't necessarily have to go back to that identity, but I don't know what the identity is of Penn State. And so I think that's one of my criticisms of him as a coach. And I think that sort of gets into what we've seen this year. I mean, the defense has been underwhelming. We can talk about, I still don't understand why they don't have a spy for these quarterback runs, but just the lack of physicality this year. We mentioned this in the preseason episode we did, that, you know, I was worried about the undersized linebackers, the undersized guys in the interior. Teams are just going to run on them, and that's what we've seen. We saw that a lot in Iowa, unfortunately. And then offensively, you know, the mismatch there, the lack of identity. Do you want to be a running team, or can you be a running team without a running quarterback? You want to be, say you want to have a passing offense, but you don't really have the receivers, but it turns out, was it the receivers? Looks more like it was Aller. And the hiring of Kotelnicki, I mean, that's sort of a question too. We can talk about Knowles as well, but Kotelnicki's success was having a running quarterback and working within that system. And yet you bring him in here to work with Aller. And then you hear one of the complaints about Knowles is, oh, well, it takes two or three seasons for his defense to click. Well, then why did you bring that guy in there if your whole goal was to win this year? That doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess that's sort of where I go back, like, where was my frustration this season? Franklin's role in that. And then just frustrations even beyond the season with him.
You brought up a lot of good points, and I'm trying to think if I agree with – I think I agree with all of them. And, you know, when we come back, I want to hit on them a little bit. I do want to hit on the quarterback choices, which is long-term how it's been. And then I want to hit on the coordinators who I think prior to the season, the vast majority of people – love the coordinators. We'll talk about that, Steve, when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. This is quarter number two of our show. Just a reminder, I think you all remember, GoPSURV, a longtime sponsor of the Keystone Sports Network. 15 years a provider of RV tailgate in Happy Valley. Well, they're changing the name, rebranding. It's going from GoPSURV. It's now Blue White RV. Some great teams that fans have come to know, but with more lodging and tailgating options than ever. This is the way it works at Blue White RV. You want to stay for the game? having trouble getting a hotel, they've got the RV set up, ready and waiting for you. You just drive there in your car for the whole weekend. You get to the tailgate at the RV. They have a shuttle going back and forth to the games. It's a great way to spend the weekend in Happy Valley. We were Go PSU RV. Now we are Blue White RV. If you want some more information, just call 800-519-8467. Like we said, it's the same team, just a new name going forward. All right, Steve, when we finish up quarter number one, I had asked you about going to some of the specifics of James Franklin's coaching tenure. You brought up some great points. I want to start with the quarterback mismatch. Boy, this is something I think we've talked about, not just we, me and you, but with others on this show, right from the start. Christian Hackenberg was not James's recruit. He was here with Bill O'Brien. James inherited him. It looked like a different type of team and the type of team and offense he wanted when he had Trace McSorley at quarterback. So now you end up with Drew Aller, who many might say is a clone of Christian Hackenberg, the same issues, the same strengths. And I do agree. The problem is, if you have this setup where you never get the top quarterback, and here all of a sudden you get a top quarterback, but he's not the style you're normally used to playing, do you bring in that talent and just adjust your team for that?
What we got was the worst of both worlds. You're trying to put a square peg in a round hole, and you have this running system that's set up that really is never going to reach its potential unless you have a mobile quarterback. That's what you had Catron Allen and Nick Singleton there for. And so, again, I understand that he may have been ranked higher, but that's not your identity. It's not clear to me what that identity is. And that's sort of something I fault Franklin for never really addressing. And you're right. It was one thing when he inherited Hackenberg, but to know that and repeat that mistake in terms of going and trying to recruit Aller, I just really blame that on him. It seems like every decade we sort of go through this. I go back to Anthony Morelli. You had some great team in 2005 with Michael Robinson. You saw what that could open up. Then you saw the decision to go to Morelli those 2 years. And then when they went back to Darrell Clark, again, a mobile quarterback, you had more success. And then I think Hackenberg was a unique situation. Obviously, you had Bill O'Brien there. He was trying to get more of a pro-style offense, and that's where, you know, Franklin inherited him. And then we saw what happened with Drew Aller. I will give credit to Andy Shea, because I think one of the questions that I submitted was, you know, did he think that Aller would be better than Hackenberg? And to Andy's credit, he was very skeptical that he would be.
And he has very recently reminded me of that statement. And it's interesting you bring up Anthony Morelli. I had forgot about that's a good comparison. And, you know, and again, he was fit that profile, a very highly rated quarterback coming out of high school, but a pro style quarterback. And yeah, that they don't seem to have had success with that. So that's part of it. How much of this, though, would you put on Andy Kotelnicki as the offensive coordinator?
So, but I guess I'm tending to go back to Franklin in the sense that my understanding is that when Aller committed, they had the different coordinator, the one we were told that was supposed to be the next great thing with the coaching. After they fired the guy that had been there before, Shiraka was before, I'm blanking on the guy's name who was there after that.
Yursich.
Okay, we were told he was going to be the guy. And my understanding was that Aller was a Yursich recruit. So then you go out and you recruit Kotelnicki to be an offensive coordinator that's had success with a running quarterback to work with the pro-style quarterback that your previous coordinator was supposed to develop. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, I'm just thinking about this, like, again, lack of identity, lack of mismatch of talent. I don't understand. And I just go back to, if you're the head coach, one of the most critical things is the hiring of the coordinators. I just can't help but think offensively, he really flubbed it. The one exception that some people point to is Joe Moorhead, but you might even go back and question that. I mean, look, you give me Saquon Barkley, Mike Gesicki, Chris Godwin, three guys that were near the top, if not at the top, careers in the NFL with their respective positions. I think I could have called a few touchdowns, to be honest.
So, candidate for offensive coordinator under the next regime, Steve Pavlik. I'll nominate you for the job. I'll see if I could put in a good word for you. And in some ways, what's fascinating to me, Steve, is you bring up another good point. Each one of these offensive coordinators coming in was supposed to be a home run hire. It was pretty obvious Mike Yurcich, there were other issues going on, but he was considered this home run hire coming in. Then you go to Andy Kotelnicki, and a year ago, people were, you know, singing his praises. What I don't understand with Andy Kotelnicki is it doesn't seem like he's able to part of being a coordinator, I believe, should be able to adjust to the talent you have. Now, it's easy to point at the quarterback position and see the issues that are going on. My question is, Nick Singleton. Steve, did he forget how to run the ball this year? Is that what happened?
I don't suspect he did. What I suspect happened, I'm curious your thoughts on this, is we haven't seen any creativity that we were sold a bill of goods on Kotelnicki. One of the things that he was supposed to do back when everybody was blaming the receivers as opposed to Aller for the poor passing, we can revisit that, but he was supposed to be able to scheme people into space. And when you think about a guy like Nick Singleton and his asset is the speed, why you're running him up the middle is beyond me, okay? Find some ways to get in the ball creatively in space, whether that's swing passes, whether that's some sort of, you know, pitch to the outside and around. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not paid millions of dollars to be a coordinator, although I will take you up on your offer. I couldn't do any worse than Kotelnicki. Even I recognize that. And I guess that's sort of where I'm just frustrated. You know, we saw when he came last year at the start of the season, there was some hype and he sort of schemed open a few plays and we got excited. We all remember the Tyler Warren touchdown where he snapped the ball at USC. But we didn't really see that creativity in the games that mattered. We talk about Ohio State, Oregon, Notre Dame. I don't recall that. And to your point, I agree with completely. A good coach is able to work with the talent he's dealt with. Here are the skills I have. Here's how I'm going to adjust my offense accordingly. You don't just throw your hands up and say, well, okay, I don't really want this, you know, crop of kids here. I don't know what to do with them. So I'm just going to give up on the season.
Well, first of all, I will just say USC did matter because they were down a few touchdowns. But your overall point makes sense. And Nick Singleton, I suggest to people, if you're new to our show and haven't been listening to me every week, one of my pet peeves has been get Nick Singleton out in space, okay, to use his superpower. I think I went absolutely crazy when I saw Andy Kotelnicki's media time last week, where he met the media and said, when asked about Nick Singleton, you know, we got to get him in a position to succeed. We got to get him out in space. I said about nominating you for offensive coordinator. I've been saying that since week one of this season with Nick Singleton. Now Andy Kotelnicki is saying it. And by the way, I'm a knucklehead. I know nothing. And I was saying that, you know, after the first game. So I don't think a Nick Singleton just stops knowing how to run the ball. And I guess where I'm headed with this whole conversation is I don't think there was any way James Franklin could finish this season just with everything that happened. My issue is I think both coordinators could have gone out the door with him also. And you know, Steve, I'm not that guy who overreacts and just goes, but I have never been so disappointed in a set of coordinators than I have been this year.
I think that's right, but I'll just go back into who hired him in the first place. And I think the timing with Franklin, you can't have people booing your head coach at homecoming. I mean, that's just not sustainable. And I understand it's a big buyout. Hopefully Franklin finds another job soon so we can reduce the buyout. I'm wishing him well in that regard. But again, I think the timing was right. As to the coordinators, you know, it's tough for me to see a case for keeping him around. I guess maybe they were probably thinking that they only wanted to have so much disruption to the team at this point. But it's just been very disappointing to see week after week the same issues show up, both on the offensive side and the defensive side, even despite the personnel setback at the quarterback position for the offense.
Well, the other part to this is, you know, I was looking, and I want to ask you about the Iowa game, is we wanted to see something different, okay? That, okay, having James Franklin out as head man, somebody else would come in, and we might see a difference in how Nick Singleton was used. We might see on defense, quarterbacks who are coming off knee surgery or whatever the injury is aren't running for 50 yards at a time on a broken play, on a scramble. Did you see anything different in the Iowa game than you've seen all season?
Not on defense. On offense, I guess we saw a little bit more running with Grunk and Meyer. You know, some people were upset that he was putting Smolik in. You know, I think we're maybe hoping that he'd run and throw the ball eventually. I think Smolik's from Iowa, so I sort of understand maybe why he got some play out there. I wasn't as upset about that as some others. But, you know, to your point, I think there was some belief, in, you know, people like me may have thought maybe Franklin was meddling in the offense or defense. Turns out maybe he wasn't. He just hired really, really bad people to do it. And the fact that they continue to persist with these poor plans, talk about finding other jobs. I don't know who else is going to hire them, but I'm sure that, I hope that the new coaches are going to keep them around. I'm pretty sure.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for quarter number two. Here's a new thing that we're going to explore in quarter three. You weren't that upset about using Smolik. I was going crazy about that, Steve. Talk about a reversal of roles, and we will talk about it when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. Just another reminder for you, our good friends at GoPSURV reminding us it's now going to become Blue White RV. Yes, a rebranding is in the process of taking place, but it's still the same great team working there, same great team that's going to make your weekend visit to State College for a football game. Just one of the best weekends ever. You just drive your car there. They have the RV ready for you. Stay Friday through Sunday, the whole weekend. You even got a shuttle taking you to and from the game. A lot of other extras going on there. If you want some more information, if you're heading to State College for a game yet this season, just check in at 800-519-8467. All right, Steve, a couple things that we got into when we finished up quarter number two. We were talking about the Iowa game, and you were saying you weren't that worked up about the quarterback rotation. It drove me crazy, Steve. I want to understand the point of it. Since they didn't throw the ball even once with Smolik in the game, okay? Not once. That leads you to believe he was brought in there for his running ability. Did you see anything there that told you he had a greater ability, was more mobile a quarterback than Ethan Grunkmeyer was?
I mean, you bring up a good point. I'll give you that, in the sense that last year we had Drew Aller, who we talked about, can't really, wasn't mobile. And then you have a change of pace quarterback like Bo Pavulovic you would bring in to do that. I think, you know, in terms of their skill sets, there wasn't really much difference between what Grunkmeyer offered and what Smoller offered. I mean, candidly, in terms of skill sets, I'm assuming based on what I saw that Penn State's going to have to find another quarterback from somewhere else next year. And so maybe that's where I sort of view Smolik as to me, I didn't really notice much difference from either of them. Even when Grunkmeyer was in there, they really weren't doing him a lot of favors. You know, I think they were smart in terms of an adjustment, talk about the differences between pre-Franklin and post-Franklin. One thing I did see was Catron Allen getting more reps. And to me, I think that was important. I know we've talked about why Singleton may not have been used correctly, but when you're relying on Grunkmeyer, you really can't afford to fall behind the chains there in the down and distance. And I think Allen is a much more reliable back in terms of guaranteeing you 3 or 4 yards to set up maybe those third and shorts where, you know, at least you can keep the defense honest with respect to, you know, is he going to throw or pass? So that's one thing I did want to point out that I did notice.
The one issue, and I had this issue also with their handling of Grunkmeyer, was they treated him like a brand new quarterback starting his first game on the road in a hostile environment. And I understand that, but I think it's misplaced logic in this way. If you say, hey, we're protecting our quarterback, so we are really going to try to become a ground game, ground and pound with Catron Allen, the problem with that is you really give your opponent an advantage because they're going to know that and stack the line of scrimmage. They're going to expect the same thing. It's just like when Smolik is in 10, 11, 12 times and you run the ball every single time, you're indicating to the defense what you're going to do. You know, it reminds me, was it Tommy Stevens who at one point several years ago when he'd come in the game, literally 17 times in a row, he ran the ball. You're giving an indication of what you're going to do. I was waiting so much for them. Okay, they're setting up the Iowa defense for something here. Yes, they're going to throw it over the top. They're going to do something else, play action pass. My point being, in the overall scheme with Ethan Grunkmeyer, hey, I'm going to say this over and over again, as long as I have this show, throw the ball on first down. That's the easiest down to throw the ball, especially when your defense is set up to say, hey, the ball's probably going to Catron Allen. How about a little play action and giving Ethan Grunkmeyer the best opportunity to throw the ball? But if you refuse to let him throw the ball like in that intermediate, you know, he's either going to dink or dunk it, or, you know, throwing it over the top to me is not being daring. You know, it you're just, oh, well, we're going to show we can throw the ball deep. How about 10 or 15 yards down the middle? Now, I know the story is we're trying to protect the young quarterback. We're afraid he's going to throw an interception. But personally, I don't think you're doing the quarterback any favors.
No, I agree. I mean, Phil Parker, the defensive coordinator for Iowa, isn't stupid. I mean, you sort of know, okay, fine. So I'll stop the run, put 8 guys in the box, and put the guy that they don't want to throw back there in a difficult position. And what concerns me is, you know, I know they'll have 2 weeks to prepare. Maybe they'll expand the playbook some, but you're going up against Ohio State, who's already going to be difficult. My guess is Ryan Day is looking for an opportunity to embarrass Jim Knowles, who left there as defensive coordinator. And I fear he's going to be successful with that. Hope I'm wrong. But to your point, you got to be a little more creative. The only thing I'll say in defense of the approach that the team took against Iowa is we talked about talent disparity. Penn State was still the more talented team if you want to go by the recruiting rankings. And they were still in a position to win the game going into the fourth quarter. One of the critiques I had was the last play of the third quarter, I believe, you know, going for it fourth down, and Penn State had the ball on their own 40. I understand temporary coach being aggressive. To me, there's a difference between being aggressive and being reckless. You were in a position to win that game. Your defense, actually, at that point, hadn't been playing that bad. You probably scored enough points to win. by giving Iowa the ball there, you gave them the field goal, which ended up being enough to cost you the game. Had you punted the ball, forced a team like Iowa without any explosiveness to have to drive the field, it's easy to say in hindsight. I just can't help but look back and remember I winced at the time they did that. I said, this is not good.
Well, to your point, Steve, there's a lot of dumb things that are said in sports, okay? A lot. One of the dumbest, I think, is, well, you have nothing to lose. Why not go for it? Well, it's either a smart football decision to go for it or it's not, okay? It either gives you a better opportunity to win or it does not. So whether you're 10-0 or 0-10, if there's a decision to be made on the field, oh, I'm not going to go for it because I'm 10-0. Well, you're trying to protect that 10-0 record and you're trying to win the game. So conservative, if the best decision is to be conservative, it's the best decision no matter what your record is. So I hate when I hear that comment, Steve.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thinking back to the things I didn't like about Franklin's coaching since you asked me. One of them was towards the end, he would always rely on the analytics. And to me, a good coach would sort of step back and say, okay, I understand the analytics, but I also have a feel for the game. I've been around this long enough to sort of understand, okay, I think my defense is playing well enough that, you know, we're probably better off punting the ball, even though the analytics says, well, it's 4th-and-1, you could probably get it. And I guess maybe that translated over to the Smith. I don't know. But doing that there, to me, didn't make a lot of sense. Honestly, it reminded me of a time when I think it did work out for Penn State. It was last year they were playing SMU. Franklin went for it. It was deep in Penn State territory. And at the time, I'm sitting there going, why are you going to let them back in the game if you don't get this?
Steve, I'm so glad you brought that up. And we got a question last week in the Ask Andy segment, which I'm going to ask you in a minute here. But I brought up that same issue in the SMU game because I think it's a perfect example when he chose to go for it on his own 20-some yard line. And it was 4th-and-short. And I do believe that the analytics say it was the smart thing to do and the right thing to do. And me personally, I think coaches don't go for it nearly enough. With that said, though, SMU's offense, they could have played 23 more quarters. And the only way they would have scored is if you give them the ball in your territory with a really short field. Now, it didn't come back to bite him because I think that's the series that ended with Adam DeLuca intercepted the ball. So it was no harm, no foul. But and it leads into the question that one of our listeners gave. He said, okay, James Franklin's out the door, ready to go to his next job. What bit of advice would you give James Franklin going to his next job?
I guess my advice would be to stop focusing on all this stuff off the field that doesn't matter. I mean, you had him yelling at students in their 20s. We never saw Nick Saban or anybody do that just because they were booing him at the spring game. I mean, that just strikes me as somebody who's very insecure. The other thing that, you know, he used to do a lot in terms of trying to, like, get his players focused on who was going to be on the board because that might determine the pay or what they might get. I mean, why don't you just focus on the field, okay? That seems to be the stuff, the actual football decisions about the identity of your team, which quarterback you should be playing, which coordinators to hire. I mean, why don't you focus on the football and leave all these other things to other people? That would be my advice.
My advice was actually on the topic we just finished with is, I know you're a process kind of guy. I know you're an analytics kind of guy. And overall, so am I. I understand that and I get it, making smart decisions. But sometimes I think whether you're in private industry managing people or a coach of a football team, sometimes you have to go more by feel. You have to understand the personalities you're dealing with. You have to understand the situation and maybe go set the book aside for a second.
But I guess what I'm thinking there is, like, people do that if they're confident. I don't think deep down he was a very confident person. And I think that's where the pressure built up this season. He'd been given everything. It was put up or shut up. You had this Oregon game, which you were very quick to point out. The season was riding on this, and it set up perfectly. You had three cupcake teams. They looked horrible against them, but it was like you had months to prepare for Oregon. They're coming into a whiteout environment. You have a bye week before, and you lay an egg. And I just can't help but think, you know, at the end of the day where the excuses ran out, I just wonder at the end, is he that confident? Is that why he was so thin-skinned when he saw 20-somethings that had a few drinks say critical things about him? Again, a coach with confidence wouldn't even consider that. Why he's trolling this social media and, like, you know, things that people are writing about him. Again, someone who's confident is not spending any time on that.
You don't worry about that. As you said, you worry about what's on the field. All right, Steve, we did the autopsy again. That part's over. Guess what? Your athletic director has the biggest decision of his career to make, okay? That's what's coming up next. When we come back for quarter number four, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to make you the athletic director. What are you looking for in the next coach when we come back?
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. I'm Jim. We've been talking about moving on from James Franklin. And you know what, Steve? It's time for us to move on. It's time for us to look forward. And let's start with the decision. Pat Kraft is going to have to make this call. First of all, your feeling on how Pat Kraft handled the whole, you know, letting go of James Franklin.
Well, I think it was the right time. I mean, you can't have your team and coach being booed at halftime and after the game. Again, at homecoming against Northwestern, we were a 3-touchdown favorite. I mean, you just can't. Franklin lost the team. At that point, you're losing the donors. Money plays a bigger role now than it has in before. I think you just lost confidence of everybody around him. So I understand the decision. I support the decision to get rid of Franklin when they did. That said, you know, it's not entirely clear to me whether there's a quick fix out there. You know, it's one thing to not like where you're headed with the current coach or now the former coach. But, you know, are you sure that the next person is going to be better? And I think that's sort of the cause for pause I have. But at this point, you've made the decision. And now, you know, whether it's going to be the right decision is up to you. And I think the first call I would have made was to Kurt Cinetti. My guess is Indiana thought that too. And that's why they paid him a lot of money, which means he's probably not going to answer my call. And then I think the question after that, you know, name that comes up a lot, one that we'd mentioned preseason, you know, Matt Rhule looks less attractive now after losing to Minnesota. I think there's a lot of reports about his winning against top or his record against, you know, top teams isn't that great. So I think that's a cause of concern. But you know, could he be somebody like maybe bridge the gap to the Paterno era? You know, it's probably something to consider. My guess is if you call Rhule, he's going to accept it. So I don't know that he's going to be my second call. So then the question becomes, okay, who outside of that are you looking at? Then you have to think too, like, how long of a leash do I have here? I guess where I'm going with that is, you know, I, from what I saw on Iowa, really what I didn't see was inspiring quarterback play. So you're probably going to need a new coach to bring in a quarterback. So does Rule come with Dylan Raiola, his transfer portal? I guess is a lot of the current roster is going to get wiped out as a result of the coaching change. Do you have a quarterback that's going to attract some talent in there? And is the goal really to win right away? And so are you considering a sort of package deal? And then you look at somebody like Eli Drinkowitz at Missouri. Would that be a good story if Bo Brabula came back and brought all these people with him? You know, it sounds like a movie, but I don't know necessarily what they're thinking about there. I'd be skeptical of hiring somebody that I said maybe the best years are behind him. People are talking about Nick Saban, Urban Meyer. Meyer's got his own issues I really wouldn't want to associate with. The guy that I'd like to see that never is mentioned much, I don't think Penn State's board would do it, is Pat Fitzgerald. I thought he was a good coach, but I guess it's a long-winded way of saying my biggest critique with Franklin is that he was an underachiever. They had a lot of talent. I don't think they ever could accuse him of overachieving there, maybe with the exception of the 16th season. So I want a guy that's going to be an overachiever. Franklin was an underachiever. I want a guy that's going to come here and be an overachiever.
Okay, you kind of answered my next question, of which is generically, what are you looking for? And, you know, I put there's the couple different bins of where the people are. The guys, the big names who their best days are past them, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer. You know, my comment to everyone who says, bring in Urban Meyer, I say, no, that's the old Urban Meyer. I want the next Urban Meyer, you know. And I look at things like Jimbo Fisher going to Texas A&M, even Bill Belichick going to North Carolina. There's no bigger name in the industry than Bill Belichick, but that's a guy you're chasing past glory. Find the guy who's going to be next in line. I was having a conversation with someone literally this morning who he was getting on me because I mentioned Manny Diaz as a candidate. And they said, what has he ever done? He hasn't won. Well, I pointed out, you know, Nick Saban at Michigan State in five seasons there. You know how many times he won more than seven games? Once. His typical, he was 6-6, 6-5, 7-5. And 1 year, I think what got him the LSU job, he won nine games. So, you know, my point is that, but somebody realized he was capable, competent, more than competent. And so, you know, who is that next guy? And I wonder if you're Pat Kraft, do you feel like you're big game hunting and you've got to get the biggest name possible? To me, that reeks of Jim Knowles as defensive coordinator. Well, he's got to be good because he's the highest paid coordinator and other people want him. I think we discovered not the right pick.
Yeah, I mean, you asked how I thought Knowles handled the decision, and I thought it was the right decision to get rid of Franklin at the right time. That said, you know, he made it very clear that his expectation is to win a national championship. And the fact that they fired Franklin midseason, where his record actually at Penn State hadn't been all that bad, I guess I'm trying to be objective there. So, you know, what does it say about the attractiveness of the job? You know, to some coach come in here and worry, hey, if I don't win in a national championship in a year or two, I'm going to be out. Historically, that hasn't been, you know, the way it's worked at Penn State, but maybe Kraft, maybe NIL, maybe that's a new era. Does that sort of discourage people from wanting to take that job? And what are the realistic expectations here? Is the expectation to win right away versus, okay, we're going to take some time. We understand it's a transition. We're going to support you through this. That's one thing that if I were a head coach or a top coordinator sort of looking at the attractiveness of this job, you know, I'd have to consider that.
Well, how good a job is Penn State?
I mean, I'm biased. I think it's one of the best out there. And I think there's a passionate and forgiving fan base. I mean, keep harping on Franklin, but the idea that you're going to find a more patient and forgiving and understanding fan base out there that can compete for a national championship, like, good luck with that, buddy, because I don't think it exists. I think in terms of the resources that seems to be there, I think the fact that Kraft is there and not Sandy Barber, who was an abysmal athletic director, I think things are going in the right direction. There's a lot of tradition, And I guess where I go back to, you know, if there's one upside with Rule is somebody who could maybe unite the fan base, somebody that could embrace, re-engage, find some more enthusiasm for the proud tradition that Penn State has. Not somebody, you know, that was sort of the Franklin Barber area where they just didn't want to acknowledge, again, what I think is a tradition that Penn State should embrace and be proud of.
Well, you know, the name you're not mentioning, it is Joe Paterno, and Matt Rule does have that connection. Should that be a factor?
If it is, it should be lower on the list, but all things considered, you know, I think that's good in terms of, okay, you have a fan base now that's sort of suffering. Can you sort of get somebody that's going to come in and energize the program? I think somebody like Rule would do that because he could, you know, again, reinvigorate the Paterno effect. I guess you could put me in that category. I'm somebody who thinks very highly of Coach Paterno and the legacy that he left there. That said, that's only going to last for so long. People want to win. And if he struggles to do that, then I think we're going to be looking, you know, beyond that point. But again, I think Rule's going to not only answer the call, accept it, you know, if Kraft gives it to him. And it's just the question is, you know, how many people between Cignetti and Rule are there? I'm not sure they're that many.
Well, how important is it that the timing in college football at the end of the season, when you have the commitment date for recruits, and then you're going to have the window for the transfer portal, if you're going for a coach, and some of the names that are being mentioned are Mike Elko, Texas A&M, currently, you know, highly ranked team, a playoff team, Lane Kiffin potentially with Ole Miss, or, you know, Marcus Freeman from Notre Dame. You know, if would you factor in that, hey, wait a minute, these guys could be stay in their job through January because they have a playoff team, and because of that, you're going to miss the recruiting period, you're going to miss the portal window. Would that be discouraging? Would that discourage you at all?
I mean, personally, my instinct would be better off wait and get the right guy. It almost means sacrificing the roster for next year just for the long-term trajectory of the program. I mean, it's been a big decision to Franklin and his buyout to get rid of him. And I think that's sort of the pressure on Kraft, as you were sort of alluding to, is like you sort of have to feel like you win the press conference, name this big guy to justify the decision. Can you do that and still salvage the roster for next year? I'm not sure. I mean, you mentioned a lot of good names there. You know, I don't know realistically how many of them are interested in leaving their current situation, you know, for Penn State. Will they just use it as leverage opportunity? Look, you're going to have other opportunities coming up too. I mean, now I think Florida's become available. My guess is other programs are probably going to be looking for somebody. Michigan may be looking for a coach, whether it's not this year or next year. We'll see if they'll be Michigan State. But.
Well, you have, I think, you know, potential other openings are Florida State, Wisconsin. You already have Arkansas. Florida's the big, you know, job right now that's available. And I think that's some of the conversation. Which is the better job, Florida or Penn State? Florida has that tremendous recruiting territory. But in the pecking order in the Southeast Conference, I think Florida is middle of the pack at best. I think Penn State being in the Big Ten, you have a better shot at winning at Penn State than Florida.
I agree with that. I think Penn State's a more attractive job, and I'm on a Penn State podcast. You probably expect me to say that. But I think objectively, you're right. I think Penn State's positioned better in the Big Ten than Florida is in the SEC.
I would like to see them go after, you know, there's some of these coaches that are doing well with teams that you don't typically expect. Drinkwitz at Missouri is the example I think you're talking about of overachieving. Are there any other names that strike you that as potential that you'd be happy to see come here?
Well, I talk about, I forget the coach's name at Vanderbilt. You know, his name gets
Clark Lee, yeah.
Lee, but he, Lee went there. He may be like a Fitzgerald situation where you want to do that. Again, I like Fitzgerald. Again, I understand why they might not go after him. I thought he was an overachiever at Northwestern. I thought in terms of what he stood for, reminded me a lot of Paterno, and Coach Paterno thought highly of him. I guess, again, the board's probably not going to look at him. You mentioned Manny Diaz. You know, he was somebody, he may have been the only coordinator in my life that I could think of recently that Franklin got right in terms of his hires there. I wouldn't necessarily be concerned about what happened at Miami because they didn't really give him the resources there. I think he's a bright guy. Another name to consider.
I do like him. I think he was the one guy when I saw his teams, his defenses playing, you could see the scheme. He did things where you knew it was him. All right, that's the final word. Thank you, Steve. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.